You're listening to KRUULP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. Welcome to Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline on this gray February Friday.
Yeah, but there's no ice falling yet.
Yet?
Yet. Yeah. You notice I said yet, didn't you?
I'm your host, Monica Hadley, and with me is my co-host and mother, Caroline Kilborn.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to our program. We have, well, I know I say this every week, but we really do have a most interesting book for you today.
That is true.
In fact, we have three interesting books to talk about, and just really, I really enjoyed reading them.
So, Caroline, do you want to tell us a little bit, or tell the audience about our visitor to the station first?
Okay, first is, okay. My friend from North Carolina is here, and he's going to be here for 2 weeks and visiting me, and we knew each other in high school, and we got reconnected, and it's pretty nice.
Welcome to Fairfield, Bob.
Okay, now about the author.
Yes.
About the author. Carol Truman is a practicing therapist who is dedicated to helping others achieve emotional and spiritual well-being through resolving and healing their core issues. She had her previous book was Feelings Buried Alive Never Die, and over 90,000 copies sold, and then she addressed the importance of resolving them and has written another book, Healing Feelings from Your Heart. And she's also an accomplished pianist and music instructor, has been exploring health and healing for the last 38 years. And she began in the fields of nutrition and weight control, and her first book, Looking Good, Feeling Great, was published in 1983. And this book is still selling throughout the country. I think that's quite an accomplishment.
Welcome to Writer's Voices, Carol.
Thank you very much. I feel honored to be with you.
Now, where are you calling us from today?
I live in St. George, Utah. That's 120 miles northeast of Las Vegas. We just live over the Nevada border into Utah. And so it's everybody's right down there in the little corner, about 6 miles from the Arizona border, too. So it's kind of an interesting place. We're in the desert.
Is it cold there or is it hot?
Oh, it's lovely here. The sun is shining. The skies are really blue.
All right.
Well, you know what they say about Iowa. If you don't like the weather, you just wait 10 minutes, it'll change.
That's for sure.
Right. I don't know where the information came from that we sold 90,000 copies of Feelings Buried Alive.
Well, it was on the back of Healing Feelings from Your Heart.
Oh, okay.
Well, so that's a little out of date, I bet.
Yeah, and now we have sold over 250,000.
Oh, boy. Well,
and you can understand why I wanted to make that correction there, Kent. Yeah.
And you know, this Looking Good, Feeling Great, considering the number of diet books on the market and exercise books on the market, yours, it's still selling. That's amazing, really. So you can just see how, I'm sure it's word of mouth. People tell it,
yes.
I have this book, and
actually,
it's great.
Actually, the way that happened, and let me just mention this to you real quickly, in some of the material I sent you, I don't know, or some that you read about me, in the late 70s, early 80s, my husband and I were involved in pioneering the round mini trampoline business, you know? So we were the pioneers, the first one. And nobody knew what to do with it, and I happened to travel a lot to, share the new way of exercising, and I met a doctor in Southern California who really, he opened our eyes so much, and we learned so much from him. And so there was kind of a need to have people know what these things would do. And so we put this book out, and we had a couple, th- three printings, and it sold very fast. And then, you know, all of a sudden that craze was over, and so we were storing, I think, about 7,000 of them in the storehouse in our storage unit. And my husband went to clean it out one day, and he said, "What about these books? Should we just throw these away? It had been years, you know." And I thought a minute, and I thought, we better keep those. No telling what will happen. Well, sure enough, there was we went to a health conference show in Southern California again shortly thereafter, and here was this young man who was demonstrating the round mini trampoline. And, of course, we just naturally walked right up to him and started talking to him, and he'd seen that book. Anyway, long story short, he ended up asking us if he could put one of those books, Looking Good, Feeling Great, with every one of his mini trampolines.
Wow.
Instead of trying to put one together himself. And so not only did we sell those 7,000, but I think we've gone into a third or fourth printing again with those.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure whether we print 10,000 or 20,000 at a time. But So it just keeps, you know, he keeps selling those mini trampolines. He's very good. He's an authority on it now and does so well in his demonstration and his teaching. And so, in fact, in 2007, I was doing a Voice America radio show for the internet radio, and I had him as one of my guests because he's just so fascinating, just a delightful young man. I mean, young, you know, how young is young?
Yeah, right. As young as you feel.
If it's younger than me, it's young.
Okay. Well, anyway, he was old enough to know his business, shall we say that. And so it's been kind of an interesting thing to watch. Who would have thunk, you know?
Yeah. Well, I love what you said on the back here. We've all shared the frustrations of diet and exercise. Diets are torture, and they tend to take the weight off the wrong places. You want to trim your hips, so you diet. And there goes the curve of your bus line. How true.
Yep.
So, Carol, do you...
Well, I will share this with you, too. We still have we have several in our house. I have one in my bedroom, and I still use it, not like I used to. But I still recognize totally the benefit of it, you know, and so especially in the lymph system. And it just feels so good. And then one thing that women might want to know, I'll put a plug in for David Hall, who sells the mini trampolines that has in my book in it. every time, doesn't have to be that one, though, but when you do the small one where you don't go really high like the backyard ones,
mm-hmm.
It exercises every muscle in your body, and if you want a facelift, there you go. Do that.
Wow.
Well, I'm a little leery because I have chronic vertigo, and the pictures in the book, I thought, gee, I don't think I could do that.
Well, you know, you might not be able to do it with lifting your feet up, but even if you just bounce, just, you know, with your feet on the mat, it would still help you.
Now, if somebody has, you know, maybe they have one of these little trampolines or they get it from somewhere else that it didn't come with your book, is there any way for them to get the book?
Sure. We have an 800 number. Our business has an 800 number. And if you want me to give it to you.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, it's 800-531-3180.
And how about a website? Is the book available?
Well, you know, I should have. Maybe during one of the breaks I can find out his website. We don't have it on, you know, it isn't one of those things that we're promoting now. However, we do have a wellness center, and it's called Life Essentials, and we do have them in there so people can purchase them if they want. But and we could send you one as far as that goes. But if you'd like to see, just look up, just Google or whatever, David Hall. And I can't even remember the name of his unit. Sorry. Cellar, I know. He does cellar size. He calls it cellar size.
Cellar size?
Uh-huh. It just exercising all the cells in your body. What is it?
Oh,
which it does. So it's
C-E-L-L-E-R.
I don't know whether it's S-I-Z-E or C-I-Z-E.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Very good.
Okay.
So you wrote that book and you published it. How did you actually go about publishing it? This was back in 1983, so it was probably before print-on-demand was around. That's why you had 7,000 copies in your storage unit. But so how did you do that?
Do you know something? My husband took care of all of that, and I don't even recall exactly. But we, and we had some professional help with, you know, help us do that, and I don't even recall. But I will say this, that we did publish these last two books that I did ourselves, and so we're the publisher.
Now, after you, after Looking Good, Feeling Great was out there on the market, did you immediately begin writing Feelings Buried Alive, Never Die?
No, I didn't. I never set out to be a writer or an author. If anybody had ever told me I would have done that, I would have said, yeah, sure.
Well,
250,000 copies later.
And that's just in English. We have it in Spanish, and as I speak, there's a publisher in Romania who has asked for the rights to both my books, and so not the Looking Good, Feeling Great, but these last two on the emotional aspect of life. And and it's just really been quite a journey. Never would have thought, never in my whole life would have thought that it would have done what it's doing. And I will mention this, I work with people on the phone all over the world, and you know, we used to couldn't have done that with the phone being like it used to be.
Right.
The exorbitant cost it would have had. But I have worked with people in Arabia, in UK, in Australia, in India, in several other places. It's just been quite an experience. And the thing that I've loved about it the most is the wonderful people I meet. There are so many great people in this world.
Well, Carol, how do you describe the theme of these books?
The way I would describe it is that, describe them, is going to what causes the way we feel and the way we act and the way we think, and then giving some tools to assist people in overcoming the parts of the way they feel, think, and act that they don't like. Mm-hmm. So many people are not happy with the way they are, you know, or
they're trapped.
Oh, I don't like
they're
feeling
trapped
that way. And I remember years ago, I used to think, my word, where did that person come from? And meaning myself, you know, because I was acting a way that I certainly didn't like to be acting, or reacting, I should say, to something.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm one of those persons, one of those people, whichever, and that I have got to get to the why. And so that's one of the questions I've asked all my life. Why? And that's what started me in looking at even nutrition. When I was in, you know, over 40 years ago, I started studying it. And then at first I thought, well, oh, this is the answer. The nutrition is the answer.
Mm.
And, excuse me? No, and then we got into the exercise phase of it.
Oh, so that was the answer.
Combination. This is the answer. And then it was like, no, there's still another component. Guess what? It was the emotional. And so that's where my journey has taken me.
Now, Carol, do you have a background in psychiatry or psychology?
Well, let me just mention this. My mother, bless her heart, was always seeking to, and she used to, she had her degree in education, and she used to work with homebound children. And then my dad had a really interesting little thing that we know now as obsessive compulsive.
Mm.
It wasn't bad at all, but it was just different. I'd never seen anything like it. And my mom just wanted to know why was my dad like that? And this one thing. And it was just one thing he did when he got dressed. He just had to make sure that everything was just so, and he'd repeat and repeat, and even putting a pencil in his pocket. You know, he was an accountant, and that for him being over, you know, going over and over and over again, or when he closed the door at night, lock the door and close it. He'd lock it, close it, open it again, close it, open it, and even the car doors. And that was the only what should I say?
The only way it displayed that this character was displayed.
Yeah, it was kind of weird, but he was just a great guy. And so my mom started her search in that, and so she always shared things with me. She even had a friend who had moved to our town. I'm a native Arizonan, and earlier part of my life I was raised in Flagstaff, and then the southern part, Phoenix area, later. But she had a friend who was a gypsy Hungarian gypsy, I should say. Delightful human being, very Americanized, but she read the palms of people's hands. You know, it wasn't
uh-huh.
like palm reading, but and so my mom was very interested in that. See, so I kind of take after my mom. She's interested in all these kinds of things and wanted to know the whys as well. So as for my background, I did take a lot of psychology and social classes, you know, and social work. But I majored in music. And what I tell people, if anybody wants to know what my credentials are nowadays, I just say, well, you know, I'm still working on my PhD from the University of Life.
Hey, good answer. But you know, music. I'm a musician. Music is a language of the soul.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah, it really is.
So you know.
Yeah, I do.
Now, a lot of people, I think, have the idea that you can't help your feelings. You can't control your feelings. You can't help. You've heard it many times. I can't help how I feel.
Exactly.
But in your books, you actually provide ways that you can control your feelings.
Exactly.
And what's one of the main tools that you've developed to do this?
Oh, well, what's interesting, and I tell a story in Feeling Spirit Alive, Never Die, of a woman who'd been married 28 years, and all of a sudden she couldn't stand anything about her husband. He just drove her nuts. Either one of you happen to come upon that story?
Well, the one I came upon was Wild Bill, which I thought
was extremely
interesting.
Oh, yeah. You got to tell that one, too.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, this one was, she couldn't handle the way he laughed, the way he chewed his food, the way he... everything he did, it just was driving her nuts. And so, and I'll share this. I don't tell who it is in the book, but that was me. And my husband doesn't mind me, right? Because he understands that it was my problem, not his. Mm. And so it was so interesting because for several weeks I was just, you know, it was like, taking your fingers across, you know, your fingernails across a blackboard, reaching, that's the way it kind of felt for me. And then this, you know, it's the old saying, when the student is ready, the teacher appears.
Mm.
And this, I had a friend who brought this woman into my life who taught me the tool that's in the book. And she was the one who was a hypnotherapist for helping people through things. And people just kept calling her and calling her and calling her, wanted her to do everything for them. And she kept thinking, well, now, wait a minute, there's got to be a better way. There's got to be a way for people to be able to help themselves without always having to turn to a professional. And so she was a very, very faithful Christian person, and so she just turned to our Maker, and she asked and prayed about it. And eventually she started getting these little inspiration. And she's the one who came up with this, what we now call the script. And so I started using that. And we just addressed that all-knowing part of us that remembers everything, whether you want to call it your superconscious, your subconscious, your spirit, your intelligence, or your higher self, whatever you want to call it, you can call it that. But you just address that part of you and ask it to locate the origin of your feelings and thoughts, or feelings or thoughts of, and then you fill in the blank. Like, so I started, please locate the origin of the feelings that caused me to be so irritated at my husband when he does this or that or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
About
We have a train that goes by outside. That's probably what you're hearing.
I didn't know that was music letting me know.
No.
Or what?
Oh, no.
That's just our friendly local train.
I understand that one, too. Anyway, so I started using that, and everything that bothered me about him, I would script it. It's what we call script it. And I want to tell you, in about, before even 3 weeks was over, I was totally, that was gone. And I was totally appreciating his good qualities again. And those other things didn't bother me anymore.
Now, Carol, did you become consciously aware of why, of the origin of those irritation?
Nope, and that's the nice thing about the tool, the script, is because you don't have to remember, and I love this part about, you know, the work I do, is that you don't have to remember. And because when you go back and rehash things, what I've come to understand, when you rehash things and you keep rehashing them and you go through the same old thing over and over again, then it just gives, you know, it's an energy. And it gives those feelings and those things that you are rehashing, it gives it still more energy. Let's leave that behind and just deal with the result of what happened, whatever it was. And you don't have to know, which is really, really exciting to me. Sometimes now it's good to understand, and sometimes if somebody gets really stuck, then I have a way of doing things, too, that I can go back and, okay, let's find out where the core of that began or what it is or, you know, how old you were. I still have that capability and still do that if we need to. But sometimes, most of the time, we don't need to, because that all-knowing part of us takes care of it. You just give it an assignment, and it'll go there and help you out.
Like they say, if you always do what you've always done, you'll always get what you've always gotten.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm sure you guys understand that that's very true.
Yeah.
You're listening to Writer's Voices with Monica and Caroline. Our guest today is Carol K. Truman, author of Feelings Buried Alive Never Die and Healing Feelings from Your Heart, as well as Looking Good, Feeling Great. So, Carol,
Tell us about the script thing a little bit. That's extremely interesting. Of course, there's a piece on it, a whole section on it here, in Healing Feelings from Your Heart. But
yes, see, I did that in the preface. I never did like prefaces and prologues and all of that in books. And
but you have both, don't you? You have an
intro. Yeah, she has a prologue too.
Because I had to cover, you know, an introduction and all of that. I had to cover it. Give them enough background so that if they hadn't read Feelings Buried Alive Never Die, they wouldn't be in the dark. And so
That was good. That was good. Yeah.
So we basically just let's see. We just. You want me to read a little bit of that?
Yeah, that would be good.
Whenever I recognize a thought or feeling that is creating disharmony, I go through the script stating the thought or the feeling. I then give my spirit, I do it, talking to my spirit, okay? I then, or you can say your soul, or like I mentioned, you can say whatever you, fits you. I then gave my spirit instructions to correct the erroneous programming that was the cause of my discomfort. The results were remarkable. Dr. Deepak Chopra, who most people know, MD, indicates in his books that the cell's memory, that is plural, all the cells' memory of perfection, which is contained in the DNA, cannot be lost. It can only be covered over, at which point the perfect blueprint of the cell is distorted. It is distorted by incorrect perceptions and erroneous programming, which alter the perfect blueprint and, in turn, distort the cells. Use of the script reverses this erroneous programming. So when I address my spirit as I use the script, I am talking to and instructing no one except my higher self, my intelligence, my spirit. Upon my addressing it, then my spirit goes to the negative feeling that has covered the memory of perfection in my DNA. knocks on the door and tells the answers the door that she, my spirit, has been requested by her body to make some corrections. In other words, she has been requested to clean house, meaning me, requesting my spirit to do that, to uncover the perfect blueprint and to eliminate the distortion. This is done by reprogramming. In other words, that's what we do. We reprogram it to restore the cell's perfect function and bring harmony and balance back to my DNA. So, and as I do this, I become responsible for myself. You know, that's the part I loved about it, because so many people blame others for what they're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
And you never get anywhere that way.
Right.
And so as I do this, I become responsible for myself, and I become accountable. In other words, I become accountable for what I think and feel, and I am facilitating my own shift or my own change of energy, you see, because every feeling, thought, everything is a frequency. And if the frequencies are negative, then they're not serving us. But if they're positive, then they are. So you cannot destroy an energy. You can't destroy a frequency, but you can change it.
Mm.
And so this is such a wonderful tool to do that. So I'm facilitating my own shift or my own change, my own transformation, by uncovering the memory of perfection in the cells throughout my body. The cells can then begin functioning as they were designed to function. The cells can realign themselves to become balanced and more in tune with universal laws, with God's laws. And then I just have another note there. Should you prefer using the term divine intelligence, superconscious, or higher self instead of spirit in addressing that all-knowing aspect of yourself, the same principles apply, and the script still works effectively. So please, and I ask people, please don't allow any words contained within the script to trigger discomfort in you.
Just change the words if they're not the words for you.
If you need to change a word there, that's fine. Feel free to modify any terminology that makes using the script more compatible with your belief system.
Now, Carol, can you give us some other examples of how this using the script has worked in your life or in lives of people you've known?
Well, what I tell people, and it's very true, because I've been doing this for over 21 years, using the script myself, you know, and I keep telling people, God's not through with me yet either. I still get to learn about me, and that's what's so beautiful. You learn about you, and we, so many of us just put that off as learning about us. But the other one I was going to mention, if I had a dime for every time I have scripted in those years... Hang on, I could pay the national debt.
So it isn't a one-time thing, it's an ongoing process.
Oh yes, it's an ongoing process, and the nice part about it is you can concentrate on it as much as you'd like, especially to begin with, when you're trying to get out of the emotional, whatever, pain, discomfort, uneasiness, whatever it is, and you'll go at it. If anybody sincerely wants to feel better about themselves and about life. And then you just kind of taper off, you know, little by little. But during a week, let me just kind of put a throw-out number there about how many times I might still script. Maybe four or five times during a week. But, of course, that's because I've been doing it for a long time. You know, but there's something comes up every once in a while that says, ooh.
Sure.
Got to go to the script, you know.
Well, in a life as busy as yours, and let's face it, it's complicated when you're in business and so forth and have all these talents, there must be a lot of things that come along, you know.
Oh, yeah, there are. And if anybody has ever seen mind mapping, you know, I give an example of that in Feelings Very Alive, Never Die, like, for instance, of fear.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, oh, that really... When I saw that, I thought, aha, that's it right there.
So we have all these other, you know, things just make him come up. And then there was one thing, and that's probably what I'll concentrate on in, you know, you said the second half of the show, in healing feelings from your heart. Let me mention this first. just so people kind of get a better idea, because we're kind of jumping back and forth.
Yeah.
I am.
Oh, yeah. Well, we are, too.
In Feeling Spirit Alive, Never Die, the main tool in there is, well, the main thing about that is helping people understand where stuff comes from. In fact, before I work with anybody, I say, will you please read the first 7 chapters of Feeling Spirit Alive, Never Die. Saves me a lot of time, because then they get the foundation that I work from. And so then I take it from there. Now, everybody kept telling me, you know, a year or two after Feeling Spirit Alive came out, oh, you're going to be writing another book. And I said, oh, no, no, please, please, no. It's a job. And it's takes time. I mean, it's grueling sometimes. And I thought, no, there's no way I'm going to be writing another book. Excuse me. And I was re-recording some of the things I have on tape and on CD at one point, and I was in the studio. This was, oh, several years after people told me, yeah, you're going to be writing another book, and I just dismissed it. But as I was re-recording something to bring it up to date, because things do change, you know, and as far as, well, from when I started and had this book come out in 1991, which, by the way, I've updated and revised a couple of times, and people keep learning. There's many more people. See, I was a pioneer, and kind of a pioneer in this too, in a way.
Right, because and some of the concepts that you have developed in this book have become very widespread and written about by many other people since.
Yes, and that's very true. And which I'm so grateful for, but it's not because of my work. I'm just one of those, you know, that was putting stuff out there. But let's see, where were we going with this?
Oh, about how you came to write Healing Feelings from Your Heart.
Yes. Okay, so I was re-recording, and I was just about through. I have a set of tapes called The Healing Journey, and I had a client who just was adamant. I didn't have the money at the time, because you see, my husband and I had lost everything that we'd spent 30 years building, and that was another thing where I learned so much, because during that time my husband, he just threw in the towel. He felt like he'd ruined our lives. He just even invited me, go find somebody else, I'm useless, and that sort of thing, because because we made some poor business decisions, rued the day that we made those decisions. And so we lost everything, and for 3 years we had a hard time getting back. And that's when I had to examine all my beliefs, all my feelings about prosperity, about money, about being worthy or unworthy of having what other people have. I even thought, no, I can't be prosperous, I can't have financial abundance, because then I can't be good, close to God. Mm. And so that was one of my beliefs, too. I had to change that one as well. And some crazy ones. And they are listed in Feeling Spirit Alive, Never Die, by the way. But anyway, just a minute.
You're listening to Writer's Voices with Monica and Caroline. Our guest today is Carol Truman, author of Feelings Buried Alive, Never Die, and Healing Feelings from Your Heart.
You know, I think whenever I was telling people about this book, and, you know, I would read them the title, and they'd say, that's right, that's true, you know.
Yeah.
Immediately they realize, yeah, that's right.
Because they don't go away, they settle someplace.
Yeah.
And we wonder why, but then also in the book I might mention is that I have a list as many negative feelings as I could think
yeah,
of.
The major feelings.
So because people haven't learned to tune in to what they're feeling. They haven't been taught to identify their feelings. And I learned that I needed to do this when my 17-year-old son would come home from high school and he'd be either angry or you never knew what he was going to be. But he happened to end up putting a hole in the drywall, you know, in a couple of the rooms in the house. Ooh. And I finally just said, wait a minute, there's something going on with this young man. He started scripting 2 weeks after I got the script from this friend who came into my life.
Mm.
And he became a different young man. In fact, he's so good now that he can counsel other people as well.
Ooh.
And so he does that too. Mm-hmm.
Congratulations.
Along with other things.
So anyway, we were talking about healing, how you came to write Healing Feelings, that you've gone through this area of, or this time of failure, and you had a friend who wanted you to record.
Yes, they wanted me to record, so to help people get started, because a lot of people read the book and they have no clue where to start. And mm-hmm. I didn't have the wherewithal to do that. She says, okay, I'll put up the money and you do it. And so, bless her heart, mm-hmm. She did that, and of course we were able to pay her back later on. But when I went to record these years later, I was in the dialogue. I was speaking into the mic in the studio, and I heard in my, you know, that still small voice said, this is the basis of your next book.
Oh.
Stopped. And I went, what?
Do I
have
to?
Who said that?
There was no question. and I was just, I was dreading that. And then all of a sudden I went, oh, wait a minute. I've got my skeleton here. I've got my, you know, I've got my outline. This will be easy. Not. It was almost as difficult. But in getting into it, I really enjoyed it. And I was really, really grateful for the opportunity to share other tools that I had gleaned in this within this 10-year period. From the first one to the next one.
Well, tell the story about Wild Bill, because it's an amazing story, I thought.
Well, perhaps some of you have read Return from Tomorrow by what's his name, Richie? I can't remember what his name is right now, and I don't know where that story is right now. But he happened to help them liberate one of the concentration camps in Germany during the Second World War, after the Second World War.
Mm-hmm.
And he told the what that was like, and the sorrow, the sadness, the unbelief that all these fellows who helped do that faced. And while they were there, there was this man that everybody who was had been a prisoner in the concentration camp. And they had nicknamed him Wild Bill because his name was unpronounceable. And he was the only one that they found that, you know, who had been in that camp, who still had their body was still looked like you or me, mom, thanks. My mother was an English teacher. Anyway.
That was my mother.
And so, he was full bodied, you know, he wasn't emaciated and skinny like the prisoners were. And so everybody thought that he had not been exposed to that. And so, and he was such an upbeat man that they just were amazed at how he could be that way in such a horrible condition, you know, that he was living in. And so as he was talking to the GIs, he just got serious one day and he said to them, this is what happened to me, and I think it was in Warsaw. I think he was Polish.
Yeah, he was. I have it right here, yeah.
Well, you have it right there?
Yeah.
Why don't you read it?
It's on page 113. Wild Bill leaned back in the upright chair and sipped at his drink. We lived in the Jewish section of Warsaw, he began slowly, the first words I had heard him speak about himself. My wife, our two daughters, and our three little boys. When the Germans reached our street, they lined everyone against a wall and opened up with machine guns. I begged to be allowed to die with my family, but because I spoke German, they put me in a work group. He paused, perhaps seeing again his wife and five children. I had to decide right then, he continued, whether to let myself hate the soldiers who had done this. It was an easy decision. Really, I was a lawyer. In my practice, I had seen too often what hate could do to people's minds and bodies. Hate had just killed the six people who mattered most to me in the world. I decided then that I would spend the rest of my life, whether it was a few days or many years, loving every person I came in contact with. Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
That is, and he did. That's what he did.
Yes, he did.
And that's why he didn't deteriorate physically, wasn't it?
Yes, exactly. Isn't it amazing?
Yeah.
That loving every person, and I'll just finish that one last sentence off that I put added to it. This was the power that it kept a man well in the face of every privation.
Yeah.
And you know, that's the only thing I repeated in Healing Feelings from Your Heart. I put that in both books.
I was going to say, I read it in that one too. And you're talking about, it's in the chapter about accomplishing forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And you have some other tools about, a really interesting tool about that maybe you can share too.
Well, okay. And the chapter previous to that is called The Crowning Principle. And that is, being able to forgive is a crowning principle.
Mm.
And I'll just quote the man who, William Thackeray, he said, "He who cannot forgive others breaks the bridge over which he himself must pass."
Mm.
I love that. So I put that in there and talk about this forgiveness thing. And then I had in my earlier years, you know, many years ago when I was learning, I had a beautiful Maori woman that I used to go to. She just had a get-together every week and in the summer in her backyard, and she just teaches. So she talked about accomplishing this forgiveness. And basically she asked us, who is the seed of our being? And, of course, you know, that was a good question. Your mother can have a baby, but she can't until something else joins her, you know. And so, okay, our father is the seed of our being, and except for those octuplets that were just born.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, right.
Which is really, really very interesting story, bless her heart. Anyway, and so we sit down, and how many times in the good book does it say to forgive?
Oh, yeah. Well, how many times you say the Our Father prayer? Every time you say it, you're asking, you know,
to be forgiven
as we will forgive. And how many people do that? Yeah,
exactly. And so 40 times, let's see, 70 times 7. And the Maori woman said, does that literally mean 490 times? And everybody just sitting there blinking their eyes. And she said, if necessary, absolutely. And so she taught us. First you forgive your father first, and then your mother, and you sit down and write, I tell how to do this in the book, I, Carol, forgive my father for, and then fill in the blank. And the nice thing about it is, and I don't even remember whether I was able to put that in here, but I learned something even after I wrote this book about it. Staying with somebody who hosted me up in the Seattle, Washington area, and let me just mention this. He was the oldest of two boys. His parents were really, you know, a German couple. Now, I can say this because I'm from a German background. My father was German, my maiden name being Kuhn. And they were very hard on these boys, and they were in a farm. They had a farm. And this man that who was hosting, he and his wife were hosting me, he was the oldest, and he could do no right. His brother, younger than he, could do no wrong.
Oh, boy.
And I'm, you know, you can hear those stories all over the place. And so he never felt accepted by his father. Well, while I was in their home, I had an appointment and somebody I was working with in their living room. So they went to the back of the house. And when this person that I was working with left, he came walking in, and I could tell he'd been crying. And he just had a dazed look in his eyes. And he walked around the room just kind of dazed. And finally he came over to the recliner, and he sat down. And then he looked at me, and he said, "That has got to be one of the most phenomenal experiences I have ever had." And I said, "What are you talking about, Jim?" And he said, told me he had decided while I was busy up with this person, he'd go back to the other part of the house, and he started writing his forgivenesses for his father.
Mm.
And as he wrote it down once, what he wrote was, "I, in his name, forgive my dad," or father, whatever you call him, daddy, father, you know, "for never accepting me the way I am, or for who I am." And he said, "I wrote that once, and I started crying." Mm-hmm. He wrote that and wrote it and wrote it and wrote it. And by the time he came, I was through with my appointment, and he came in to tell me this. He had written it over 100 times. And before the energy on that hurt changed. And finally, it was gone, and he was not hurting anymore.
Wow.
Just by writing that out, I forgive, you know, your name, forgive my father for never accepting me for who I am, and release him to his highest good. And that's part of it, is releasing them to their highest good, because as long as we don't forgive, we hang on. And and I have a whole other story about that. Did you guys read that about? Yeah, it would have been in there that you probably would have read my experience with my father.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just amazing.
Well, Carol,
you write the same thing out. Excuse me, I'll just quickly finish.
Okay.
You write the same thing out over and over and over again until there's no more energy on it, and then you know it's taken care of.
Wow.
And then you go to another thing that you need to forgive him for.
Now, Carol, I know you had a section that you wanted to read today, and I want to get to that before we run out of time.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
And we haven't even talked about your writing process yet, so.
Well, these books are just fantastic, and I'm sure we can get them locally here. We have two great bookstores. And
Can our independent bookstores order them?
Oh, sure.
Great.
Yeah, you can get them from any of the wholesalers. Usually, and if you want to get them from us, you can even buy them from us, but you can get them from the wholesaler if they don't have them.
So it's Healing Feelings from Your Heart and Feelings Buried Alive Never Die by Carol K. Truman.
And, of course, Looking Good, Feeling Good, mm-hmm. which I think is excellent as well.
So, Carol, which one are you going to read from?
Okay, I had it marked here. Sorry. I'm in the wrong book. I had it marked here. I think I still have it. Oh, yes. Something that I learned after I wrote Feelings Buried Alive Never Die during those years that I went without writing was about, and I have a chapter of it in Healing Feelings from Your Heart, chapter 4, which one needs healing? I'll quote Byron Katie. She said, "We are entering the dimension where we have control, the inside."
Mm.
And that's what's so beautiful, because most of us, our parents, weren't taught to even, once again, not to identify their feelings. So, okay, let me just quickly read this. If I get going too fast, tell me, because this was so amazing to me. The degree of success we experience when cleansing the inner vessel, and that's what we do when we take care of our inner feelings that don't serve us, and reconnecting with our true self. See, we're finding our true self by going to our feelings. So the degree of success we experience when cleansing the inner vessel and reconnecting with our true self is often commensurate with the amount of healing our inner child has experienced. And we've all heard of the inner child, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
When the major part of our hurt or pain is stuck in the child aspect of us, and we rarely have a conscious understanding of where we are stuck, it can be challenging for us to forgive. This is because the child is still reeling from the unresolved emotional pain experienced during childhood. An individual may also be stuck in another aspect of their being, for along with the child aspect, we also have the aspects of our will, our self, our female, our male, our parent, and our adult. Sometimes it's necessary to address the baby or even the fetal aspect of a person. In addition to the aspects, there are also the physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual areas, and we all know that, of the individual or that need to be considered. As we know, each human being comes with their own unique personality, which is usually evident within days of their birth. As we also know, the development of each personality is decidedly affected by outside stimuli from a very early period of fetal development. Since each individual is unique in every way, several personalities or people, so what I'm saying is several people exposed to the same exact stimuli, even identical twins. Several people exposed to the same exact stimuli would be affected differently. In other words, what would bother one personality may not ever even make a ripple in another. It's just the way we are. And then I tell the story of a young girl I was working with, a talented and brilliant 10-year-old, whose parents had been at their wits' end due to her seeming lack of common sense. She has a difficult time being responsible for anything, getting herself ready for school, bringing her assignments home, taking her puppy outside to relieve itself, giving her parents phone messages, remembering where she puts things, and so on. At present, Tara's 7-year-old sister is much more responsible than she. It is difficult for the parents to watch what Tara is going through at school, as well as at home. No one understands her or what makes her tick. She is unsure of herself and doesn't have many friends. Connecting with another person is essentially impossible for her. Mm-hmm. Tara escapes reality by sitting for long periods of time in front of the television. Even though she is musically inclined, playing the violin and piano, practicing takes much more effort than she cares to put forth. Basically, it seems there's little joy in anything for Tara. One day, while I was talking to one of my friends, Marilyn, a colleague and friend, I mentioned the challenges Tara was facing. I shared with her some of the frustrating scenarios Tara's parents had recounted to me. Upon hearing these accounts, Marilyn suggested that Tara may be stuck in her baby aspect, and then she needed to be nurtured, cuddled, and cared for as if she were a baby, with no expectations or pressures put upon her. When Marilyn offered this as a possibility, I knew it was true. So then Marilyn told me about an 8-year-old child that they adopted, and they already had a good-sized family. She and her husband had this girl for several years. During early childhood, though, before they adopted her, this girl had been left alone daily for hours at a time with her little brother. Consequently, the girl's development was dwarfed due to the lack of nurturing, bonding, and love. As Marilyn prayed to know what to do and how to help this unfortunate child, it was conveyed to her that the adopted girl was stuck in her baby aspect. Marilyn had received the guidance she suggested for Tara to help this daughter that they adopted and mature her up to her current age. Marilyn's husband and children worked as a team in helping this young girl move beyond the baby aspect. So after about 2 months of dedicated effort from the family, the girl outgrew her need to be nurtured and cuddled. She evolved into a normal member of Marilyn's family as the underdeveloped baby aspect was finally content and made whole from therapy she received. Now, upon learning about this, I was reminded of what had taken place when Tara was 6 weeks old. Her mother returned to teaching school because her father was finishing his education, and the mother was putting him through school. Tara was taken to a babysitter every morning. She would start crying the minute she was handed to the babysitter and would cry practically all day. They went through 5 babysitters in 2 months because no one could handle Tara's constant marathon crying.
Mm.
There's no telling what they might have done to her, you know, while she was crying.
Yeah.
Leaving her in someone else's care was extremely difficult for Tara's parents, but there were no other options if her father was to finish college. Evidently, being left with the babysitters was so emotionally traumatic for Tara that part of her, that aspect, had never healed.
Mm.
Because of her experiences, she is still stuck in the first few months of her life. Even now, when a situation presents itself that Tara has a difficult time handling, she just checks out, basically. She just takes a hike. Her emotional body takes a hike, so to speak. She checks out because it's too painful to stay in the present situation.
Mm.
She reverts to the only way she has known for dealing with the challenge, essentially the same way she dealt with it before, being left by her mom and dad. Checking out was her mechanism for survival as a baby and continues to be as a 10-year-old. At present, she is being nurtured, cuddled, and having the baby aspect of her needs filled at home.
And how did that work out for Tara?
She got better. She really got better. Now, the interesting thing, here's another technique that I learned as well. and we gave this to Tara's mother, and that was involving sitting face to face with her, silently and lovingly holding her hands. They look into each other's eyes. You know, don't break eye contact, just sitting close and holding hands and looking at each other. Keeping continuous, unbroken contact without distractions. And they'll do this 15 minutes each day for at least six consecutive days. Tara will then repeat the process with her dad. If the parents can send forth from their hearts loving messages to Tara while in this process, the therapy will be even more effective. Mm-hmm. This exercise will help create the bonding between Tara and her parents that didn't occur during birth or shortly after birth due to complications, and which were later compounded by the mom having to leave daily. Now, there's another one, too, that I shared with her later, even after this book was printed, and it's in further in the back called Healing Old Relationships. And it is a very, very powerful one, too.
Oh, these books are fantastic. They really are.
So,
I don't think there's anybody. There's not anybody alive that doesn't have something in their
some
past.
Unresolved feelings.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, I think you're right. I really do. And the thing I like to point out to people, it doesn't mean that they're a bad person.
And it doesn't mean their parents were bad people.
That's
either.
Right.
No,
they did what was modeled to them.
Yeah.
We just need to remember that. So when we can go there and realize that everybody is doing the best they know how. I mean, I did the best I knew how as a parent, and if you guys are parents, I'm sure you have too.
Yeah.
But sometimes we miss something. And my kids will, once in a while, who are all adults now, bring something up to me, and I say, you know, I certainly didn't mean to do that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then I asked them, will you forgive me?
Oh.
And that's the other thing I learned too. If we'll just get rid of the pride, and I talk about that in this book, too, and how to get rid of it, because that stops us from moving forward in our lives. And so if we can just say, okay, I did something wrong, maybe I wasn't the best I could have been, so will you forgive me?
Well, Kara, we're out of time. Last thing, what are you working on now?
Well, I'm working on a little bit more of my life experiences, and I'm not sure exactly how this is all going to come together. But we'll get the direction I need to get, and the new things I've learned since then.
Well, let us know when you're publishing your next book, so we can talk about that, because we didn't get nearly all through.
Oh gosh, it has been such.
You guys have been so patient. I can. My dad used to tell me I had diarrhea of the mouth.
Well, this has been a real pleasure.
Certainly has.
Not too much. So
Thank you for joining us, Carol.
Thank you for having me.
And if you're listening on Friday, please stay tuned for James Moore and Planet Erstwhile and his romp through many possibilities. If you're listening on Monday morning, please stay tuned for The Cult Show, and we will close with a quote from Mom.
Well, this isn't exactly, but I just have to do this one. We all have scars from the past, but it doesn't have to control our lives today. And I think that's the basis of what she's talking about.
See you next week on Writer's Voices. Thank you.
Writers' Voices is hosted, produced, and engineered by Monica Hadley, Caroline Kilborn, and Shemaine Montana. Archives available at KRUUFM.com and WritersVoices.com. Writers' Voices is a production of KRUULP 100.1 FM, broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield, Iowa.